Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM and the T70A. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. Over.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 59, August 8th, 2012. Meet the Net Control Operators. Good evening, everybody. It's Ham Nation, and it's a show all about ham radio. And we're going to have a lot going on here tonight, as we usually do. And we got a very special guest, and we'll bring in all these guys later, let you see what's going on 20 meters with Bill. But first, we got to go down to Costa Mesa. They do other things there than play volleyball. And one of them is put up a lot of antennas. Hello, Gordo. How are you doing?
We are doing just great, Bob. And yes, we have Julian's antenna up and playing. In fact, he's doing final touches on it as we talk. So he's here in spirit, probably on his super little iPad, iPhone, super phone. But Julian says hi to everyone. And Costa Mesa has been shaking. We have had earthquakes, a swarm of them, starting last night. And coincidentally, this is the big Navy Marine Mars test going on that I'm taking part in, and about 12 other Mars operators. And right as we're passing simulated earthquake traffic, the real one hit. So it's been exciting here, Bob. Back to you.
Oh, wow. Did you shake any glasses off the shelf? It wasn't severe, was it?
No, not severe, but the ham bands were ablaze. We all go to one repeater and we give damage reports. No damage reports, barely felt it. So it was probably a 4.5. But nonetheless, when it gets hot here, we're getting ready for the big one.
Oh, boy. Well, we're glad that everything's okay. And did you feel that in Mississippi, George? You didn't feel any earthquake in Mississippi, did you? Hi, George.
Hi, Bob. No, I felt a little thunder rumbling, but that was about it here. We have that this time of year. It's good to see everybody. And, well, I think I just felt something. We've got a big announcement coming up later tonight, Bob and Gordon, right after Smoking and Solder. So we want everybody to stay tuned for that.
Yeah, it's something about giving stuff away, isn't it?
Yep. Something about giving really good stuff away.
Yeah, and all of us hams, we like to give stuff away and we like to receive stuff. So, yeah, that's great. We're excited about that. So tune in for that. Before we get started, I want to bring a couple of things to everyone watching. We got this letter, email, from Amanda. You know, we haven't heard from her for a couple of weeks. And guess what? She got hurt. Here's what she says, and we'll show a picture in a minute. It said, last Sunday, I missed a step on my porch and fell and broke my ankle. Ouch.
Oh, no.
It was completely dangling off my leg, really nasty. Ew. So I had surgery Monday, able to leave the hospital on Tuesday, and I had several pins and a plate put in there, three broken bones. Alex, show this picture she sent. Oh, my.
And,
you know, it's got to really, really hurt. And we feel for her. I just had to put a little bit of Amanda's touch to it, though, Gordo. I asked her if Jeff painted her toenails blue.
Well, that she did. Yep.
I didn't get an answer about that. But I'm sure we will get an answer about who painted those toenails. Oh, we really are going to think about you a lot this week. You got to be in a lot of pain, Amanda. So we'll be looking forward to you coming back and giving us your real, that was a real tale. Man, oh, man. So Oh, you hang in there, kiddo, and we'll be all thinking about you. And what'll happen is she's going to pop up on 40 meters one of these days. That's what's going to happen because she's a real trooper. I real quickly, we get so many emails, all three of us. We get so many. Here's one I just got today, and it said, Bob, took your advice and found an IC-730 off the internet, hooked it up to a friend's antenna, and within 2 minutes, I talked to his station in St. Louis from White Plains, New York. Can't wait to hook it up to his 40-meter dipole. How about that? And see, I'm sure he didn't pay a lot of money for it. 730s, as I said, I picked this one up from Roger. Arendelle got it for me at Dayton for $150. And look at that. He's having all kinds of fun. And because he follows some of the stuff going on here, that's great. And here's another one. Bob, Gordo, and George. Good news. I received my call yesterday. It's KD0STH. It's a nice call. And his father was a ham years ago. And he said, my dad planted the amateur radio seed in me in the 70s when I was 8 years old. After 20 years as a professional broadcaster, you guys and Ham Nation have really inspired me to get back to my roots. There we go. It just keeps going. And that's pretty cool. And I know that you get a lot of those, Gordo. And then last but not least, I've got to tell you about this. This is a deal. We talk about promoting ham radio. Check this out. This comes from Raleigh, North Carolina. This is what they did for field day. You know, most of us just go out and, okay, we're here. But W4TTX. Robert Starkenberg, he promoted this thing. He went to the Woodstock people. This was a lot of work, folks. The people that did the Woodstock and owns the rights to Woodstock, the music festival. You remember their famous poster? Well, he turned it into a ham radio poster. Look at that. And they used this to promote their field day. They had one of the Heil Goldline microphones. We had to give them permission to print that. They went to Woodstock and got permission to print that exact bird and all of that, if some of you guys are around during Woodstock. But isn't that great? Because it was 3 days of peace, only this was peace and radio. And man, oh man, I thought this was terrific. So all you guys in Raleigh, they sent a t-shirt. They were all wearing their t-shirts. And check that out, Gordo. Is that some kind of promotion or
that
what?
That is good. I like it. That is great.
Too. Yeah, super duper. So those guys are on it down there, and I really thought that was fabulous. Well, we have a special guest, as I told you, and this guest has a lot to do with promoting Ham Nation, and it's Bill, 5KLN, and Bill, down in Texas, is the net control of the 20-meter net every night after Ham Nation. Bill, welcome to the show, and we just have to thank you so much for all of your hard work and keeping the nets going. How cool.
Thanks, Bob. It's great to be here, and good evening to Gordo and George, and thanks for having me over.
Well, it's nice to see you, and you got quite a shack there. You might want to let us see some of that. I think we've got some slides of that, but right before we get into it, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about how you enjoy ham radio, how long you've been here, how'd you get here, and all that good stuff about this fabulous hobby we call amateur radio, Bill.
Yeah, okay. Well, it all started with me when my dad gave me a crystal radio set when I was 8 years old. And then a few months after that, my uncle gave me an NC-100, one of those with that big six-inch round dial that changed the little numbers as it rotated. And that's what really got me into listening to amateur radio all over the world back in the 50s. And it took a little while from there, because from 8 years old, I really struggled with the code, learning it the wrong way, but we finally got it. And by age 19 in 1963, we got our novice license. And our first station was a Globe Chief 90, with an SX-71 40-meter dipole we used on a 40 and 15 meters. Over.
Wow, that's great. Well, you have some of that equipment behind you there, too. So let's take a look at some of this. We'll start with the stills. Go ahead, Alex, and run them, and Bill can explain of what we're going to see.
Okay, as we always start, we always want to look at how the coax cables get into the shack. It's a homebrew window installation made of aluminum plate with 6 2-inch coaxial feed-throughs, similar to the MFJ windowsill product. It's mounted between two pieces of wood glued together and weather stripping on all four sides. And we always want to see that as it comes in. The antenna that I use is the K4KIO 20 through 10 meter HF antenna mounted on a 40-foot telescoping mast. The antenna is mounted directly to the top of the mast and has two sets of guy ropes. The system is great for anyone with a city lot or a situation where there's no room for a tower or a full-size beam. That's a great antenna to use. And then the mounting, the support system, is mounted on a 10-foot 4x4 set in a concrete patio footer with the top of the 4x4 strapped to the eave of the house. The rotators at the bottom of the 4x4, which turns the mast and the antenna. Oh, there's another picture of it. That's the top part. That's the bottom of the rotator used as a thrust bearing. Crazy situation, but hey, got to use what you got to use. Okay, this one is when you put up a telescoping mast, you have these rings that are on there, and that's what we use for the guide ropes. And it's a 4-inch piece of PVC pipe cut in half, clamped to the mast with two hose clamps and held in place with a 1/4-20 bolt. This allows a smooth, non-friction surface for the guide ring to slide when the mast rotates. And this is my shack. So this is my operating table. Really fortunate to have what we do have. The equipment ranges from a Tentec Orion to a classic HW101. And the antenna and radio switching system located on the bottom left allows me to easily connect any radio to any antenna with a flip of a switch. So that's a station, that's a setup, lots of little goodies.
That's wonderful, and that's what we hear on 14268 from K5LN after the net, right? Right there is where it originates. I have to tell you, that's very clever, the way you mount the rotor down at the bottom, and then the whole mast turns, and you use the bottom of the rotor. It's almost like a thrust bearing. Here we go again, Bill. Hams are so ingenious. We come up with stuff, and like some of them say, there isn't a schematic for this. No, there's no schematic. We just do what we have to, so I applaud you on that. That's really cool. A nice setup.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate that. Yeah, just had to show that to give other people ideas, because that's how we learn. We learn from each other. And you see one setup, then you think about it. It gets the old noggin working a little bit to where you can come up with your own system for your own situation. And that's what we had to do with the hex beam, because we live in a city lot. Over.
Yeah, see, there's a lot of people that can't put up big antennas and all that. I was strapped for years back in my other homes, and of course still am in my main home there in Illinois. So I know how that goes. So I applaud you for that. That's really great. And one of the other things that's neat about the station is you still have some of the classic gear there, and it's kind of fun to get back and dial up the old Heath kits, right, Bill?
Oh, it's great. I was raised on CW. And that HW16 over my shoulder here, I think it's the other one, but I turn that on every once in a while and just get on there and just have a great time using the straight key. It sort of takes me back. I get tired real easy with it, but because we're usually using a keyer and a set of paddles, but we love it. The HW100 is also super. It's got if you want to get a good radio, they're a good classic radio to get. The price is not that high, and they're easy to work on, easy to fix, And if you get one of the manuals, they're great to follow the instructions.
It's, I find it's the way to get into this hobby and really learn what we're doing. That's so important to a lot of the guys that are just getting started, is they want to dig into it also. And boy, you get into a radio like this new one I just got this week, one of the new 7600 ICOMs. There's no way you're going to take a soldering iron to that. But you get into the Heath kits and all that, it's a way to learn what's going on. So that's great. And it's a time for us in the program to say, I know how many of you listen to this on podcast, and I appreciate that, because I do too, listen to the audio only. But you really need to go in and look at the replay sometime. They're all there. They're always there. Just put Ham Nation into Google. You don't have to listen to learn and remember, oh gosh, was it .twit/ no, Ham Nation into Google. It comes right up to all of the pages of our replays, including number one, where Joe Walsh had wrote and plays the theme every week, but it was an hour with Joe. And there are all the shows there, and you want to look at that because you can get to it easily. But in this case, if you're listening on the podcast, you want to go look at that really super station that Bill has put together, and then you can see what he did too. So those are things that that you need to know about Ham Nation and pass on to all your friends. Just Ham Nation into Google and you're there. And of course, if you hit the little button that says watch live, it will take you to whatever Leo has on the network at that particular time. And of course, at this particular time, it will bring you to Ham Nation. Well, that's really great, Bill. Well, we'll see you on NOAA 14268 here after the show. Is that correct?
That's correct, 14268. Look forward to seeing a bunch of folks to check into the net. And we enjoy having everybody support Ham Nation on 20 meters. 73s, guys, thanks for having me on.
Okay, Bill, thanks so very much. We appreciate you being here. That's really cool. And we'll look for you on the net after a while. And Gordo, you get to work, Bill, from there after the net, don't you?
I do. In fact, we worked Bill all the way from Hawaii when we had our little Outbacker antenna sticking in the seawater. So that hex beam really did a good job. And next week, I think we're going to tune in to our 40-meter net control mic up in Garlic Country, huh? Go ahead, Bob.
Gotcha. All right. Super duper. Well, we appreciate so much all the different people. And next week we'll have Mike on, and we're going to try to have all of these fellows that are running the nets afterwards on, so you can meet them and see them and see their stations that you talk to every week. But we're talking about antennas there. Julian and Gordo, I don't want to let you guys alone too long because you get into really interesting stuff, and who knows what. Some of it's real crazy, but that's okay. What are you doing now? It's antennas about this long, isn't it?
They are. They're pretty short because we're up on the microwaves. And you know, this note from Dave Sumner indicates that amateurs face growing challenge in microwave bands. And that challenge is if we don't use the microwave bands, we're going to lose them. And there's many groups throughout the United States that have come together for the microwave enthusiast. And out here on the West Coast, it's the San Bernardino Microwave Society and the San Diego Microwave Group. And we're also here on the West Coast going to have the microwave update. And that's going to take place up in Santa Clara a week after PacificCon. So a lot of activity taking place. And I thought you might want to take a look and a listen at all that microwave has to offer. And we also tried out the zinc air system on some of the microwave transmitters. And after we're finished with the video, we'll tell you a little bit about how it worked okay on some equipment, but not so great on others. So, Alex, if you're ready, let's go ahead and head for the microwaves. Listen to this. the best of microwave. And we're here today with the San Bernardino Microwave Society, as well as the San Diego Microwave Group. And king of microwavers, many of the kings, is Wayne Yoshida, King Henry VI, Whiskey Zulu. Wayne, how about telling our Ham Nation viewers a little bit about this get-together, along with that great beacon that is being pulled in?
Sure. I'm Wayne, KH6WZ. That's where the king comes from, by the way.
Oh, okay.
There you go. The I'm listening to frequency 10368310. That's the frequency for the Fraser Mountain Beacon. That's the N6CA/B at Delta Mike 04 Mexico Sierra is the grid square. And if you listen to the IDR, you'll hear it, for those of you who know Morse code, and of course you should. In the meanwhile, again, I'm with the SBMS group. There are about 20 people here testing their 10 gigahertz and up radios. We have everything from 10 gigahertz and 24 gigahertz and 47 gigahertz. If you look that way, you will see a post and a transmitter and receiver combination that's used to test our transmit and receive capabilities of our microwave systems today. That's what we're doing.
And Wayne, how long have you been playing microwave, and what's your best? And I'm going to turn that down just a little bit. And, of course, I turned the wrong knob, so I'm in deep trouble. What's your best DX that you can recall?
Actually, I'm one of the few people who actually hold a North American record for two-way communication on 10 gigahertz. Actually, I was with Chip N6CA at the time. We were in Central California, and the other stations were in Baja, Mexico. It's almost 1,000 miles, over 900-something kilometers.
Wow, 900 kilometers on 10,000 megahertz. Now, what type of power output do many of these systems run?
Well, anywhere from between 1 watt or less to as much as 10 watts. I have a 6-watt system here, eBay surplus. It's amazing what you can find these days. The dish antenna certainly helps. This is a 30-inch Prodlin offset dish with a feed that's been modified to handle 10 gigahertz. You can see the flexible waveguide on this unit going to the transverter section here.
And, Wayne, we have two contests each year sponsored by the American Radio Relay League.
Yes, that's right. It's called the 10 gigahertz and up, and it's in August, and then there's a part two in September.
And everybody heads for the mountaintops?
Actually, people go to mountains. They go to the deserts. They go to the flatlands in Central California, or they go. They operate from home.
And, Wayne, where would be a good place for folks to look up more about San Bernardino Microwave Society and where to get some of this great equipment, either as a kit or fully assembled?
Very good question. First of all, the San Bernardino Microwave Society has a website. It's ham-radio.com/SBMS. And if you go to that website, it'll include links to other websites as well. Let's see, what was your other question about equipment? The equipment I happen to be using is a mix between commercially available kits and homebrew stuff, as well as surplus material from eBay and other sources. Here in the U.S., you can purchase kits as well as fully built products from Steve at Down East Microwave. Another outfit based in Germany is Kuhn Electronic. In the U.S., it's distributed by SSB Electronic USA. You can Google their websites to find them as well for more information. Again, the SBMS and the San Diego Microwave Group have been very, very helpful to all of us here getting on the air and modifying our equipment and testing it and getting our systems running.
Chris, N9RIN, here for the San Bernardino Microwave Society 10 gigahertz and higher antenna test, right?
Yes, that's correct. We're testing our radios to make sure that they're working and able to hear and transmit for the upcoming contest.
So we're going to do both receive as well as transmit, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And how many bands will we be able to test?
Let's see, it looks like about four. 10 gigahertz, 24 gigahertz, 47, Oh, I guess only three. I think Tony was planning on trying 76 gig or 77 gigahertz, but that's not available.
Here's my rig. Have a surplus cobbled together feed horn. Inside is the transverter assembly itself in this box here, which is a surplus box. And seems to be getting very warm. Bought a dish off of eBay. It's a 3-foot dish. And then in the back is the IF radio. It's an FT-817. And I found out that very stable voltage is required by listening to members of the San Bernardino Microwave Society and their past experiences with battery voltage problems.
It takes a weak signal 2-meter radio. If that's going to be your LO, it could be 432, could be 10 meters, but that is the heart of the receiving system after the transverter brings the signals from 10 gigahertz down to the LO frequency. And look at this. This is a classic. This is the old but venerable ICOM 202. What a rig. And here's the way we check that we're really locked into the real signal. Just put our hand in front of the feed. Here we go away. Yep, that's 10 gigs, and it's playing well.
Okay, so go for transmit.
Okay, ready to transmit.
That's it.
Transmitting.
Okay, got it.
Got it?
Yep, he's got it.
Okay. Making sure your dish is absolutely level, we use the Gordo method and a little plumb bob there. And that's how we tell when we've got the dish absolutely aimed level. Marty is with the American Radio Relay League as vice director in charge of all of, Southern California?
Southern California and Arizona. I'm not in charge. We're basically unpaid servants.
Well, you do a great job, and the league does a great job. In fact, the league has a couple of operating events on 10 gigs coming up, right?
They do. In fact, the 10 gigahertz and up contest, one of many sponsored by the league to encourage people to get on the air, has two weekends to it. The first weekend is in just 2 weeks here in August, and then another weekend in September.
Wow, and we'll have all the microwavers out. Now, they've got to lug all their gear out. Tell us what you got here, Marty.
Well, this is kind of the simple approach. It's one which we can drive around. What we have here is an old aluminum Halliburton case that has four transverters in it. You were describing transverters earlier that take, in this case, 2 gigahertz, 3, 5, and 10, those four amateur bands, converts them down to 2 meters. The 2-meter radio is in the vehicle, and there's a rotator in the vehicle. The black thing below in front of the case there and behind the dish is a rotator, so I can aim the dish.
Wow.
That dish has a dual band feed. It will take 10 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz. You'll notice most of the other folks you're looking at have much larger dishes. They have more gain, which makes them give better signals over distance, but it also makes it more critical to point, and also it would be much more difficult driving down the highway at 60 or 70 miles an hour. As it is, when I put the full set of antlers on this thing, it goes down, mileage goes down from about 19 to 14. If I had one of those on, I'm not sure what I would get.
Pat N6RMJ adds a computer to not only look at signal strength, but also do some of the digital modes on 10 and higher gigahertz. Plus, it also allows him to take a look at CW that sometimes is so far in the noise that only the computer can decode it to make sure he's tied into the right station or the right beacon. And again, we see the Anderson connectors in use by the 10 and higher microwave experts. 10 gigahertz, that is. 10,000 megahertz X-band. All right, how's the testing going? Do we have some real winners out there?
Not to pat myself on the back as Pat, but so far I have the best on 10 gigs.
And, Pat, you've got a computer built right into your system, right?
For Chris?
That's correct. The computer gave me 5 more dB of receive signal.
Well, plus you can do digital modes as well.
Correct. digital or CW with it, and it helps on peaking.
Kerry in 6IZW, we do this same ERP MDS testing at our San Diego Microwave Group about a week earlier, and then we come up here. We have our combined San Diego Microwave Group and SBMS testing. We've got good results, and we've got bad results, and that's what it's all about. Is you are finding some rigs that need a little attention, and other ones that are working just fine.
Dan, K6NKC, says you got to keep this steady. So take a look what he uses. He uses, it looks like a discarded old battery, yet he's got a backup battery here. Battery power is so important for 10 gigahertz microwave mountaintopping.
So here you will see a regular 10 gigahertz transceiver, the dish, the IF radio, and the signal from the IF radio is being fed into this computer. And then on the screen, you will normally see a baseline and a signal in the form of a straight line. In the case of WSJT, you will see a number of dots on the screen. And then the software will decode these dots into a particular frame that forms a QSO in principle. The trouble that we are having here is because of the sunlight, we get too much reflection off from the computer screen, and actually that's why I use this arrangement here. And normally I will sit under the hood, so to say, in order to see the picture. It is a drawback, but getting a computer that you can use in daylight is a very expensive proposition.
Go ahead.
I am.
Oh. We're transmitting.
That's never a good sign. Go ahead.
He's got it.
He does?
Yeah, he's got it.
That's like when you're arm wrestling and the other guy goes, go ahead, start.
Well, we really had a great time, and I hope you enjoyed that. And again, as Dave Sumner with the league has indicated, we really need to use those microwave bands. And our use of the zinc air battery initially was okay, but on single sideband with the pulsating current draws, the zinc air could not provide enough voltage regulation. So they have a new brand of zinc air coming with some giant capacitors, as well as a voltage regulator and a higher voltage. And we think that that's going to be the cure. But for right now, zinc air for single sideband, unlike FM, SSB, constant current, always varying, is going to be a wait and see until we get more voltage regulation. So that's microwave, and we hope to see you in a couple weeks up on 10 gigs and higher. Bob, back to you.
Gordo, this is fascinating stuff. It takes me back to my days when I got into amateur radio in 1956, and I was into the VHF, and that was a territory that not many had really, we hadn't had 6 meters, but just a few years. They had just given it to the hams, and I was so intrigued by the experimenting. So for all of you that are listening on the podcast, again, I just invite you to go look at some of the things, the ingenious things that it takes. And I got to ask a question, Gordo. I guess like one of these things that you that doesn't really count in trying to find where your antenna is on 10 gigs. Is that right?
Oh, no. That's very usable. In fact, the magnetic compass many times is much more stable than some of the electronic compasses. So you got to have a magnetic compass like that, Bob. You'll do well.
Oh, it was good to see Wayne. I really like Wayne. He's a great guy. And so many of those guys, goodness, it's really something. And hey, George, I want to ask you, as a professional broadcast engineer, have you ever used a microphone for a plumb bob?
Never used it for a plumb bob. I've used it for a hammer, though.
Well, I was a 664. Yeah, right. That's true. But there you go. I thought that was very ingenious of him to use that for a plumb bob. And That's great. Oh, how much fun do we have on ham radio? A lot. So I'm glad you're all here, and I'm glad you're trying to get things together so you can join us. And there you heard from Kristen a while ago, and you heard from all these guys that send in this letters every day, and they're joining this fun. And there's so many things to do. You might want to work DX and just talk to Europe. You might want to work the 2 meter sideband, or you might want to get on 10 gigs, or you just might want to get on 14.268 and talk to Bill, K5LN, after the net. There you go. After the show. We're going to take a break here, and we're going to have a word from W6TWT Leo. Hi, Leo. Let's see what you got over there in Petaluma for us tonight.
Hello, everybody. Leo Laporte here. Hello, George. Hello, Bob. Hello, Gordo. Good to see y'all. I know when I first started getting my ham license, we have had trouble with the high-frequency antenna, but we was using the FM handy talkie, and I was using an ICOM, and everybody said, you gotta get on D-Star. You gotta get on D-Star. I am excited for D-Star fans. The D-Star QSO party's coming this fall, September 21st. Through 23rd, it's a contest to accumulate the most contacts, a little different than DXing. The DSO or the D-Star QSO party is more about international fellowship. So ICOM's goal is to contact as many countries as possible. Official rules will be announced at the 2012 Tokyo Ham Fair, being held August 25th. D-Star has been a really, I think you know this, important part of amateur radio. Because people like me with a handy talkie and not maybe a great antenna situation can use D-Star, really a great way to get involved in the hobby, to get great communications. It provides for the emergency communication community as well. Digital voice that just sounds great, high-speed communication. And, of course, because of the repeaters, the great D-Star system, you can talk to people from all over the world and, of course, all over your state and a variety of cities. So it's a great way to get involved in the hobby. And I know there are a lot of people who just D-Star's it for them. So I think you'll be very interested in the D-Star QSO party. Fellowship with hams around the world. It really is truly a worldwide event. But you'll be using the D-Star repeaters, so you can contact at both D-Star stations and D-Star users. A great way to develop friendships, work as many countries as possible to increase your chances to win. You can actually, you'll have to read the rules at icomamerica.com/hamnation. Double, triple, or even quadruple your chances if you contact a set number of foreign countries, okay? And then 7 lucky winners will just be randomly selected from the eligible entries. So the party's going to be a lot of fun. Details will be revealed soon. The drawing prizes will be announced. The official rules, who can participate, how to submit your log, will be released later this month at the Tokyo Ham Fair. That's August 26th and 27th. And also, I'm sure there will be new releases for D-Star and from ICOM, I'm told. Of course, ICOM, one of the companies involved in D-Star, and they make the best D-Star radio. So visit icomamerica.com/hamnation, www.icomamerica.com, ICOM, for more information on the D-Star QSO party and to register for ICOM's weekly drawing. I think I'm going to do this one. I got my ICOM D-Star radio. I'm ready. I'm ready to go. I got the 2820 and my handy talkie, so I'm all set. Back to you, my friends, George and Bob and Gordo. Take it away for more Ham Nation.
Yes, we'll be looking forward to speaking with you on D-Star. That's going to be fun. But I'm going to Huntsville in a couple of weeks. I'm really looking forward to this, and that's when I'm going to get together with Ray and some of the guys down there. Robbie at Gigaparts is talking about a real special dongle that might be used also, because we don't have a D-Star repeater, but you don't need one. So we'll figure out how to get that going at Huntsville. I'm really looking forward to that. It'll be fun. Robbie at Gigaparts has invited us to come down. We'll be in his booth. Also, I imagine Rick's going to be there. Remember this? How many emails do I get a week about this? Rick, the sign man, just look up thesignman.com, and he's going to be there making up badges, so I'll probably get a couple of new badges for myself there, too. So Rick's going to give us that going on and get that going on for sure. Well, let's see what's going on in the news around the world of amateur radio. And to best do that is to bring in Bill Pasternak's team from his wonderful newsline and Don Wilbanks. Take her away, Don.
From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1825, here are the Ham Nation headlines for Tuesday, August 8, 2012. A proposed permanent secondary allocation to the amateur service at or near 5 megahertz is among agenda items for the World Radio Communication Conference in 2015. There are numerous items on the meeting agenda as spelled out at the end of the recently concluded 2012 conference. One is the proposal for a possible new allocation to the amateur service on a secondary basis within the 5.250 to 5.450 megahertz band. The IARU describes such an allocation as being among the best for hams to use to provide around-the-clock emergency communications. So far, little in the way of objections has been heard in public. And don't hold your breath waiting for the FCC to create a nationwide emergency calling frequency on 2 meters or any other amateur service band. The regulatory agency basically said that it's not necessary to have such a frequency cast in stone in the Part 97 rules. Brian Boyle, WB0YLE, and Jim Dixon, WB6NIL, had jointly filed a rulemaking request asking the FCC to designate 146.55 megahertz in the 2-meter band as a non-exclusive, nationwide amateur radio service emergency communications FM channel. The petition noted that other services such as Citizens Van Radio, the Aviation Service, and the Maritime Service have specific channels set aside for emergency communications. They argued that a similar designated channel in the amateur service could serve the same purpose. But in this denial order, dated July 31st, the FCC claimed that Dixon and Boyle had not shown that a problem existed that would be addressed by designating a nationwide amateur service emergency calling frequency. To the contrary, the FCC noted that the rules as they now stand provide the amateur service with what it calls the flexibility to provide emergency communications in a way that takes into account frequency availability and other local conditions. Under the current amateur service rules, that licensed operators can use multiple channels on the same or different amateur bands if needed for an event. They can also use multiple channels in the same band when multiple but different events occur. A new VHF ham radio system will soon be headed to the International Space Station. At the July 17 ARIS meeting, Kenneth Ransom, N5VHO, reported that his group is in the final stages of preparing the flight certification of the replacement hardware for the degraded Ericsson 2-meter radio. That rig is part of the second ISS amateur radio station located in the Columbus module. According to Ransom, they had been hoping to launch on Flight 33S December 5th. Now, however, comes word that the new radio could be carried aloft on Flight 49P, slated to launch November 1st. Ransom's group is trying to finish the certification process in time for this earlier flight option. The degraded Ericsson VHF radio may be returned on Flight 32S in October. The team is very interested in trying to determine what the problem has been with this particular piece of gear. The Herald Palladium newspaper says that the remnants of the famed Heathkit Company that once employed up to 1,800 people in St. Joseph Township, Michigan, is now on the auction block. Owner Don DeRochers told the paper that the company, which was down to a half dozen employees at the end, defaulted its lease and has filed for bankruptcy. Last known as Heathkit Educational Systems, Heathkit was primarily dependent on federal and state funding for schools. Unfortunately, spending in education continued to drop, and as such, it was economically unfeasible to continue operating. Founded in 1926 as an aircraft company, Heathkit shifted its focus to electronics after World War II when it bought surplus electronic parts to build kits. Heathkit left the kit business in 1992, focusing on educational materials, then announced it was getting back into the kit business in 2011. According to DeRochers, it was losing the educational business faster than it could grow the electronics business and wasn't sustainable. The 2012 Radio Amateurs of Canada National Convention, slated for the weekend of August 10th to the 12th, has been canceled. Planners cite a low number of pre-registrants as one of the reasons for the cancellation. The organizers will be immediately refunding any registrations received prior to cancellation, and they're already working on plans for their 2013 show. More about the cancellation can be found online at convention2012.rac.ca. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation.
Well, thanks very much, Don. It's such a pleasure to have a pro like you come in here and help us every week, and appreciate you doing all of that, and especially Bill Pasternak to put all that together. And one of the things that we didn't talk about, and we should a little bit, and it kind of goes along with what Gordo brought to us earlier is that hams are always experimenting. We're doing things way up there, way off there, way down there that nobody ever thought about doing. It was the fun of amateur radio. And what comes of all of those experiments are things like the Mars rover that just went up. How many amateur radio operators do you think was in that room? You know, they showed a picture of all those people that were making that happen. I'll guarantee you a better percentage of that room were amateur radio operators. And look at the thing that I use here, Viasat. This is a brand new technology. I remember when it was installed January or so, I had many people say, it won't work. It won't work for the internet. You're going to have delay. It won't work. Well, yes, all of the technology that was there before had problems. But in the past 3 or 4 years, a whole bunch of hams, and I guarantee you that a lot of the engineers are hams, they, of course, figured it out. And it's always the hams that figure it out. And here we are with this great Exceed system, being able to provide my internet from here to nowhere. We had no internet when I moved here. We had no cell phone. And it was Wilson, the people that build ham radio antennas, that builds a cell phone repeater. So it's all behind the scenes ham radio guys. And kind of remind me of the guy that was looking underneath the curtain a while ago to Louis C's computer. A lot of them are like that. They're underneath a blanket. They don't really want to wave the flag of their technology, but it's there. And it's all hams. I got a new piece of, and this isn't great technology, but I want to show you something. This is cool. You know, for years, and I've got two of them right down here. I noticed, Bill, you had a couple of them. We've been switching antennas. You know, you hook up the transmitter in the center, and then you have four or five antennas or whatever. Well, MFJ's got the coolest little deal. I have one of these out in the middle that's switching, but here's another one. This is just a two position. Here's what happens. You hook up the transmitter into this little box. Just plug it in, and that's where the input is. You put this onto 12 volts. Then you take the output of this, and this cable, of course, is going to go outside. It can be, in my case, 500 feet long, and it goes up to this little box out there or mounted on your antenna. And what happens is you can have like a 6-meter antenna and a 40-meter antenna, and you switch them. Now, I have a question for you. It might be a contest, George. What do you think? How are they getting the power to all of the stuff in here to work the relays? What do you think, George? Would that be a contest to figure out how the power is getting there? What do you think, George?
Yeah, I think that could be a good contest item there. I believe I know how they do it, so I'll be quiet on that one for right now.
Okay, yeah, we might do that, and we'll see what happens here. But what a cool little gadget this is, because they got to get 12 volts, and they got to switch all the different frequencies to the antennas you put on it, and you don't need all of these knobs. You just have a simple little button right here. And you have one antenna or you have the other antenna. How slick is that? There again, MFJ. Martin has all kinds of very smart guys down there doing some cool things at MFJ. Well, let's get down to Mississippi, just not too far from where all the MFJ stuff is done. And let's see what's going on. George, what's happening in your town? You got a friend with you tonight, too, a friend of amateur radio for sure.
Yeah, I've got a friend over here, Bob. We're going to drag him in front of the camera here in just a minute. And we've got something special going on tonight. I'm going to do a segment on capacitors. We've talked about resistors before. We really hadn't talked about many other components. So capacitors is probably a good topic to cover at this point. But I want to give away our regular prizes right now just to get them on out of the way before we get into the segment here. And last week we said we were going to give away this Constructing HF Wire Antennas book. And the question was, can you have too much ground system in the ground? Well, Some people said that, yeah, you could. So I just took a random number out of everybody. I didn't want to get into an argument on ground systems this week. But our winner was James Sanders, and he said you can't have too much in the ground. And, of course, you'll always run into more opinions out there, and that's correct. And, James, thanks for entering the contest. We'll get that book out to you this week. And for next week, we're going to give away another prize here from CheapHam.com, and this is going to be the solder practicing kit. We've got another one of these. And if you'd like to win that, just email me at hamnationcontest@gmail.com and tell me what's another name for a capacitor. So, Alex, if you've got the video on capacitors ready to roll there, let's take a look. This week on Smoke and Solder, we're going to talk about capacitors. A basic fixed-type capacitor consists of two metal plates that are separated by an insulator or dielectric. Now, the dielectric can be many different types of materials, such as air, paper, mica, or a number of materials that have a good dielectric property. There are many different types of capacitors for different uses. When there is a potential difference or voltage across the plates of a capacitor, a static electric field develops across the dielectric, causing positive charges to collect on one plate and negative charges on the other plate. Energy is stored in this electrostatic field. An ideal capacitor would have a single constant value, capacitance, which is measured in farads. This is a ratio of the electric charge on each conductor to the potential difference between them. However, in the real world, the dielectric between the plates passes a small amount of leakage current and also has an electric field strength limit, resulting in a breakdown voltage. The conductors and leads introduce an undesirable inductance and resistance. You can see there's no such thing as a perfect capacitor. Capacitors are widely used in electronic circuits for blocking DC while allowing AC to pass. They're used in filter networks for smoothing the output of power supplies, in resonant circuits that tune radios to a particular frequency, in electric power transmission systems for stabilizing voltage and power flow, and for many other purposes. The schematic symbol for a fixed non-polarized capacitor is two parallel lines. Occasionally, one of these lines may have a curve in it. There's a line drawn out the center of each to indicate the leads. The schematic symbol for a polarized capacitor is the same, with a positive symbol indicating the positive lead. A variable capacitor is the same symbol with an arrow drawn through the center of it. The formulas for multiple capacitors connected together are right backwards from the resistor formulas. In other words, to find the total value of capacitors in parallel, you add their values together. As an example, if we had a 1 microfarad, 10 microfarad, and 100 microfarad capacitors all connected in parallel, we would add 1 plus 10 plus 100 to determine that their total value is 111 microfarads. The formula for series capacitors is similar to the formula for parallel resistors. We take the reciprocal of each value of capacitor, add those together, and then take the reciprocal of that number. For example, using a 1 microfarad, 10 microfarad, and 100 microfarad capacitor, we would take the reciprocal of 1, add that to the reciprocal of 10, and add that to the reciprocal of 100. Then we would take the reciprocal of this whole number, and we would find that our total value was 0.9 microfarads. Now, a couple of words of caution here. Larger capacitors can store a hefty little charge. This is why you'll often find larger capacitors with a shorting strap across their terminals. You'll also want to ensure that you do not exceed the working voltage of a capacitor or reverse the polarity on a polarized capacitor. Testing capacitors used to require large, complex instruments. Fortunately, today, we have inexpensive digital capacitor meters. In fact, some digital voltmeters will even check capacitors. However, their range is usually somewhat limited. Before we had these modern digital instruments, many of us would check capacitors with an analog voltmeter. you'd put it on the R times 100 scale, and you'd touch the legs of the capacitor, and you'd see the meter jump just a little bit. Then you'd have to reverse the polarity, and you could check it again. And depending on how far that meter swung would give you an idea if the capacitor was good or not. You could check it against a known good capacitor of the same value and get a pretty good indication. If the meter did not drop all the way down when you got through measuring, it stayed up somewhat, then that would mean that capacitor was leaky. Now, this would only work on electrolytics or larger size capacitors. Small capacitors wouldn't measure anything. Now, to see a capacitor in action, I've had this one charging on a 12-volt power supply. I'll disconnect the power supply now, and we'll take a little 12-volt bulb and hook it across the capacitor and see what happens. The capacitor quickly discharges through the bulb. Now, if we'd had a larger value capacitor, it would have taken a little longer for it to discharge. There are so many potential uses for capacitors that there's no way we could cover them in one show. But in the future, from time to time, we'll take a look at circuits which use capacitors. Well, there you go. There's a little bit on capacitors, and as I said, we'll talk more about them in the future. Look who I got here, Bob.
Hey, Ray.
Ray, how you doing, man? Ray. I was over here listening on 20 meters. Good to see you.
Not doing well, everybody.
We've got a special announcement we want to make here tonight, Bob. Is that okay with you and Gordo?
It always is.
This is
absolutely
what Ham Nation's all about. What do you think, Gordo? Should we let him do this?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, Ray thinks we need to give away something. We've been giving away some little prizes, but he says let's up it a little bit. Ray, what have you got that we can give away here on Ham Nation?
Well, I figured with Ham Nation and especially Smoke and Solder's about building things and doing things, and you just had that excellent video about setting up your grounding in your home, the one thing that we haven't covered has been mobile installations and mobile HF. So while it's not the one sitting right behind us, we'll be giving away an IC7000 in a mobile installation contest.
Yeah, it's not this one now. I've got this one, but it's one just like it. And let me tell you, I'm sure, Bob, you and Gordo both know how nice a radio this is. And this would be your ultimate mobile radio. But you got more to go with it, don't you?
Yes, there's more to go with it. It's not just something that ICOM's doing on this. We've also got a $250 gift certificate from Comet, as well as a $250 gift certificate from Diamond as well. So while you might have everything set nicely in your vehicle, 7,000 with a Diamond HF or the new Comet HF antenna for a base, and then a base VHF and UHF antenna as well.
Yeah, so that's going to make a nice package for somebody. And if you'd like to participate in it, we've just got a very few rules here that you got to go by. Number one, we are only opening this to licensed U.S. amateurs because of duties and one thing or another.
I've got that.
But you're not eligible, Ray.
Oh, okay.
As a matter of fact, no one with Twit Networks, Amateur Logic TV, Howl Sound, Gordon West Radio Schools, ICOM America, Comet or Diamond, or their affiliates are eligible for this. We want it to be a viewer of Smoke and Solder out there, a typical ham. And how are they going to win this? What do they got to do if they want this radio and this antenna package?
Well, I believe I received an invite through Facebook to a Smoke and Solder page.
Yeah, it's at facebook.com/groups/smokeandsolder. You can go there and just sign up and request to be a group member, and we'll add you right away. And what do they do when they get there?
Well, I'm hoping that they're already liked the Smoke and Solder page, and they can post on the wall the photo of their installation. Not their buddy's installation, right, or one that they found on the internet. And I hope the red beast that always shows up in everybody's Dayton video is not one of them that gets posted.
Yeah, it's got to be your own installation. It can't be a picture of Gordo's or any of those famous ones on the
internet.
Although
I do like Gordo's Jeep.
Well, I do.
I mean,
too.
Not Jeep, but it's dune buggy.
Yeah, but I just don't throw my radios around like that, right? So it's got to be your own. How many entries can you make?
One entry, because it's the photos going through Facebook. The photos are actually tracked by whoever submits them, and everybody can only like a photo one time. So it keeps it very simple. While you can get your friends involved in voting, that can help run up the score. But realistically, you can tell if it's a nice installation, and it doesn't always have to be what is nice. It could be something neat and cool on how you've got your mobile antennas installed. I know Comet, when they also have Maldol, they have a nice motorized mount. So when you go into the parking garages, you just hit a button and it lays down in the back of the vehicle. So there's all kinds of very cool things you can do.
So we won't. The best or the most unique or the most innovative installation, and they can post that to the Smoke and Solder Facebook page, put a little description on there, and then viewers, whether you enter your rig on here or not, go vote on these that other people are going to be posting, and they can begin posting these pictures on Friday, August the 10th.
All right.
And you'll have up to Wednesday, August the 29th, to get your picture on there. So you've got a little while.
So it gives you about 3 weeks to get something installed, to hide the wires, drill a few holes, and also touch up that paint where Julian and and I don't know if Julian scratched that or if Gordo did, but...
Not me.
We'll blame it on both of them.
Both of them did?
Yeah, I would blame it on... Well, they're a pair, you know, so if one's responsible, the other one's in there somewhere.
Oh, somewhere, yes.
Yeah. And the only... Well, I won't call this a restriction, but the only thing it's going to cost you if you win is the taxes. If there are any involved in this, you may not have to pay taxes. It just depends on what state you're in and you know, such as that. And what we're going to do is let everybody go on there, have 3 weeks to look at these photos and like the ones that you like. And at the end of that three-week period, what are we going to do, Ray?
I can't remember how many, but we're going to take the top selection and then give it one last round to see who or which one will have the best one.
Yeah, so we'll take the top 10 and we'll put them in a regular Facebook poll where you can go through there then and pick from any of these top 10. And that person is going to be mighty happy that you chose them when they get this radio this nice antenna package from Comet and Diamond. And ICOM. We thank you, Ray. This is going to be a great promotion for Ham Nation, and we're really looking forward to getting a look at those good mobile installations out there. Anything else that we didn't cover there about it?
Well, I do see in the chat room a couple of questions. No, it's not only for HF installs. It would be HF, VHF. With it being an amateur license required, it would not count for CB, so you'd need to have it as an amateur installation. amplifiers are not required, but that always adds to it. Antenna installations along with it, be proud of what you've done and show it with pride.
Yeah, because our viewers are going to vote on this, so it's not necessarily up to Ray or I or Bob or Gordo who wins this. It's up to the viewers out there. So enter your radio and go do some voting out there on the ones that you see, and let's give away this rig here. Bob, what do you think about that?
It's really great. I appreciate ICOM doing this, and it's wonderful to have Diamond and Comet with us also. So. Get in there and make that mobile look good. And by the way, I have a paintbrush. If anybody wants to borrow it to paint up anything that Julian might mess up or Gordon. You didn't do that, did you, Gordo?
No. That was not me. And I'll make sure and get it all cleaned up.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks very much, guys. And all of the viewers as well as us on podcast, just go to Facebook.com/groups/smoke and solder, and you can enter the picture of your mobile radio, and we're looking forward to the best of the best. And it's not always the biggest. I have 72 antennas. No, that's not where it is. It's the best, and We'll see who wins when you look at all these pictures. That'll be great. Well, we're really, really out of time tonight, but I do have to go up and see what's happening with Cheryl. Cheryl, how you doing tonight? The chat room behaving for you? Nice to see you and have you aboard.
Hi, good evening, everybody out there. And hi to you, Bob, and Ray, George, Gordo. It's great to see you. Yeah, it's just I wanted to make a quick announcement. Everybody wants to know the name of the email address for the contest. So I'm just going to announce that real quick. It's hamnationcontest@gmail.com. We always get that question. So there's one. And another person wanted to know where Gordo gets his light-up call sign that flickers. So, again, it's www.jimsengraving.com. He made my sign, too, with the mahogany base and many for Bob as well. So there's that. Everything is doing good. But, Bob, you know, N1FOY, he says, what kind of scope monitor is on your bench? He's been asking a couple times in a row here, and I wanted to get that in tonight, please.
That's an old, ancient, but really good Kenwood. Kenwood's made those for years, and it really works great. I use it for a lot of different things, and of course, it's in line with all of my vintage AM gear back there, but I also run a cable to it, and you'll notice it's a red wire, Cheryl. Red wire works better than black wire. I just wanted you to make sure you noted that, and all the chat room noticed.
Excellent. Well, red is better then. Anyway, I did want to make a quick announcement to let everybody know that on Amateur Radio Newsline, arnewsline.org, where you can actually get your MP3 file, I'm going to be doing a recording of a segment for Mr. Pasternak on Joe Walsh, and I wanted to make everybody aware that will be available in maybe about a couple days here. I think that's how there's a little bit of time to process everything, but a story on Joe Walsh, so everybody check that out. And other than that, AC6BB, Bill said he wanted to pass this along to George. He says he has a super capacitor electric screwdriver with a 90-second recharge, 40-plus screws made by Coleman, no battery, he says, 10,000-plus recharges. Pass this to George. He wanted me to put that out there, too. So I just thought I'd jump in and mention that. And I wanted to let everybody know that David and I, actually, K9LPK, we still do test our tubes at the local tube tester across the Wisconsin border. Believe it or not, there's a place up there that has one where you can dial in with the paper and look up your tube and plug them all in and hit the button. It's pretty interesting to have a vintage piece of test equipment to use on your vintage equipment.
Absolutely. You have to have a tube checker. All right. Well, thanks so much. And we're going to have to run on down the road here, and we'll catch everybody. Cheryl, you'll be on 3850. Bill will be on 14268, and Mike will be on 7268. Those are starting points. You might have to dial around a little bit, because if somebody's on that frequency, we can't just take it over. We have to abide by the rules. So we'll find everybody somewhere up and down the band. And things are going. So everything all ready to close down in Costa Mesa. You headed out to 40 meters, Gordo, or where are you headed?
We're headed for 40 meters and also meeting up with HAM instructors. And next week, we're going to talk all about free stuff for those Helmers teaching class. See you all later. Hear you on 40.
Yeah, free stuff. I gotcha. All right. Yeah, George, you got her all closed down. You and Ray going to go, you probably go to 20 meters, won't you?
We're going to go everywhere, 20, 40, D-Star, Echo Link, every radio we can get fired up over here. And by the way, that contest does not require that you have an ICOM radio or a Diamond or Comet antenna. You can use anything you want to as long as it's a ham radio. No CBs.
Okay.
You could use a coat hanger, though. There's no law against that. If you can get somebody to vote for it, you can enter it.
I'm not helping you, Mike. It's, okay. It's a little rough.
All right. I'll enter my 1956 KWM-1 Collins. That was quite a rig in those days. It was super. Okay, guys. Well, we're about ready to shut down here. And I wanted to I've gotten a lot of emails this week about this guy. It's finally in full production, so if you're looking of a way to get on the internet, the USBQ is here, and we're very excited. We finally got into full production, and it'll answer a lot of people at one time here that, yep, and several of the hosts here on the Twit Network are using them now. So no more USB condenser microphones. Thank you. Oh, these things are ridiculous. So we can finally use a decent dynamic and make things sound good on the internet, not pick up everybody's room. Well, tune in next week. We're going to have a lot going on. I'm hoping to have Mike on, who runs the nets from the garden capital of the world up there in Northern California. And he's got his piece of garlic around his neck because it is the garlic capital also. So we'll check him out on 7268 here in just a little bit. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Thanks for listening. And please check out some of the replays and keep those cards and letters coming. And we'll be looking forward to getting it all happening. There it is right there, 3847, 7268, 14268. And the do drop in node is 355800, 355800. And then on reflector 14 is module C. You'll find WX4ADX there. Reflector 14 module C on D-Star. Greetings, everybody, from good old Pleasant Hope, Missouri. We'll see you on the air this week, and we'll see you back here next week on Ham Nation. Thanks so much to Leo and the entire staff at Petaluma for giving us the bandwidth and taking care of all of this, and we'll talk again next week right here on Ham Nation 73.
Okay, everyone, hello, Ham Nation. You're all invited to check in tonight with us on 7268, the Ham Nation Post Show Net.